You're listening to The Leonard LoPate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Robert Badinter was one of the most active of the lawyers that crusaded against the death penalty in France in the 1970s, and he's recounted that legal and political battle in a book called Abolition, One Man's Battle Against the Death Penalty. It was originally published in France in 2000 and has since been translated into half a dozen languages, and now it's being published in English by Northeastern University Press. Monsieur Badinter is an author and a professor, and he served as Minister of Justice under President François Mitterrand. He currently sits in the French Senate and is active in the global fight against the death penalty. I'm very pleased to welcome him to the show today. Hello.
Hello.
You began as a criminal lawyer. Is that what got you involved with fighting against capital punishment?
Well, as most lawyers of my generation, post-war generation, I was, I would say, naturally against death penalties in the culture of French intellectuals and especially members of the bar. But what changes me in a militant of the cause is the fact that I defended a man who was accused of having, with another man, taken as hostages in a penitentiary the nurse and one of the surveillants. And they refused to surrender. Assault was given, and the bodies were found dead. Now, during the case, during the trial, I proved, and the jury agreed, that my client had not murdered anybody. It was the other one who killed the others.
These are Claude Buffet and Roger Bontemps.
Yes.
And
therefore, and nevertheless, the jury decision was a death sentence for the one who had killed and for the one who had not killed.
Because he had aided and abetted.
Yes.
In this country,
yes.
If you could, the same thing can happen.
Yes, but the difference is that one was the murderer and the other one had never in his life spread blood. Nevertheless, the President of the Republic, Monsieur Pompidou, decided to send both of them, the one who had killed and the one who had not killed, to the guillotine.
Because the President is the last resort here. He can commute a sentence.
Yes, he can.
That's after you've gone through all the appeal courts.
Yes, that was after the Court of Cassation control of legality. But then I decided that both should be sent to the guillotine, and I went to the guillotine with my client, and I saw him cut in two, because that's a guillotine. You take a man alive and you cut him in two parts.
And you cut his head off.
Yes, but that's part of the body.
Mm-hmm.
You take a man alive and then cut him in two. That was the guillotine. And when I left the courtyard of the jail, I swore that as long as I shall live, I shall fight death penalty, because I couldn't admit it. I've always been an opponent, but a man was not killed, being killed under the name of justice, that I would never, never accept. And from there on, I was a fierce opponent of death penalty in France and after the abolition in France, which had a great fortune of bringing to the National Assembly and the Senate, who voted the abolition, I still had been fighting death penalty the world over, global abolition.
Well, at the time of that trial, hadn't most of the other countries in Western Europe already abolished the death penalty?
Most of them. Well, France was the last one in Western Europe, a shame. And it was done, the French being, like just today in America, partisans of death penalty. The morning I went to the National Assembly, a newspaper published a poll, 64% of the French were for death penalty, 32% against it. Nevertheless, National Assembly and Senate abolished under the proposal of President Mitterrand. And if I look at things now, I'll tell you bluntly, I am amazed and satisfied by the tremendous progresses made by the cause of abolition in the world. Things have radically changed. France that day, 81, was the 35th state to abolish death penalty. You have 194 states in the United Nations. 136 today have abolished death penalty. We passed from 35 to 136. Now, abolition is largely the majority in the United Nations. And no country has reversed abolition once it has been adopted. And furthermore...
Well, we did in this country.
No.
There was a time when there were no executions.
In 1972, the Supreme Court decided that death penalty, as it was carried and decided, was a cruel etc. And we all thought that death penalty was abolished. But if you consider the decision, then it opened a way for state to modify the legislation in order to conform. It was not a political decision by a democracy. It was a judicial decision trying to restrict and eventually suppress death penalty. That's why I say it's not a change of the legislation.
Now, if you took a poll in France today, would the public want to see it reinstated?
No.
I
insist on that. Everywhere where death penalty was abolished, people, after a while, just think that it would be a nuisance to go back. Take the England. England abolished in 72. Three times Mrs. Thatcher was not specially benevolent, asked the Commons, because of the situation with terrorism in Ireland, to reestablish death penalty. And three times the Commons refused. Nowhere, as I say, went back. For one reason. Because once you have abolished, you realize that it doesn't change anything in the fight against crime. Criminality never raises up when you abolish death penalty. It remains the same or sometimes lower.
Well, we'll get to those arguments in a little bit.
It's facts.
My guest is Robert Bettenter. His book, Abolition, One Man's Battle Against the Death Penalty. Well, in France, as we said, there was you could appeal a case. And in the case that you first talked about, Roger Bontemps, you did appeal. How often was the death sentence overturned?
No. I'm sorry, I shall be more precise in terms of law. You could ask the Court of Cassation to check on the legality of the proceedings. There was no Court of Appeal to rejudge the case, whether or not the decision was legal. If it were illegal, then there would be a new case.
So the court could even think this man is not guilty, but couldn't do anything about it because the trial had been conducted properly.
Yes. Yes. And then it was up to the president, where the very end was the master of death or life. Too much of a power for one man in a democracy.
I don't know what it's like in France, but in this country, some people have pointed out that the debate over the death penalty has put many people into somewhat contradictory positions. Some supporters are opposed to abortion, but believe in the death penalty. Opponents of the death penalty often support abortion rights. Did that come up in the debate in France?
Of course. Debates are everywhere the same. The answer is a simple one. The difference is this. Apart the fact that, remember, you can only practice abortion on women up to a certain time. It's a chance of life. It's not yet a living
Well,
person.
This is open to
apart,
debate. Some people say conception, some say later.
Apart from that, it's up to the woman to make the decision on her own body. It's not somebody who comes from outside and say, you will abort. She has the choice. In the case of death penalty, the man who is sentenced to death has no choice under the name of justice.
What was the role of the church in France? France has become a rather secular country, but the Catholic Church still has some clout, doesn't it?
All the churches, Catholic or Protestant, Jews were against death penalty. Same for all the humanitarian leaguers, the civil rights fighter, etc.
You talked about the guillotine cutting a person in half. Were the debates ever about the guillotine being too cruel, or were there people who argued for a more humane effort method, as they did in this country when it was decided that the electric chair was too cruel, so lethal injection was instituted instead?
The question is not the way you proceed. The question is whether you keep or not death penalty. There are always in some countries, proposal to make it human. No, it's death penalty, which is against humanity for one reason, always forgotten, is that the first right of a human person is the right to live. And the state there finds its limit in democracies. Totalitarian regime always carries on death penalty.
And I've been told that you can usually tell whether a country has a death penalty or not by looking at prison conditions. What was the case in France before the death penalty was abolished?
The prison condition. It has never been satisfactory.
Because there were riots and there were revolts in the prisons because conditions were so awful at the time?
Conditions are not satisfactory in the French prison. I devoted a great time and study about the problem of relationship between prison and democracy. And I found out, apart from the case of France, that everywhere you have a sort of iron law on prison. In a democracy, people just don't accept that men in prison would live better than the worker outside who lives in the worst condition. And therefore, the condition of prisoners can politically be changed only if the general conditions of the lower class are improved. And that's true everywhere.
My guest is Robert Badinter. His book, Abolition, is published by Northeastern University Press. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Robert Badinter, who is a lawyer, professor, a politician, and an author. And his latest book is Abolition, One Man's Battle Against the Death Penalty. It's published by Northeastern University Press. We have come to a case that was a turning point in France and your professional life, the case of Patrick Henry. Now, in this country, Patrick Henry is one of the most wonderful names. It represents patriotism. But in France, I guess it would be Patrick Henry. He represents one of the most heinous crimes.
Definitely.
Tell us what happened there.
He kidnapped a boy from a family whom he knew at the school, coming out of school, and he claimed for a ransom, you know. And he killed the boy, and afterwards still kept on calling for the ransom. He was arrested, and his murder had rose up in the French public the most extraordinary wave of indignation. Because for 8 days there were news, the child is not in calling for the ransom. And people lived that as if they were the parents, and we saw the parents on TV. When he was arrested, three ministers said that he should be sent to the guillotine. The trial had not started. And everybody thought that it was the case in which definitely the accused should be sent to the guillotine. Very, very unanimous consensus.
So, because even many people who oppose the death penalty on the whole think that serial killers, child killers, terrorists who take many lives might be the exceptions.
I will leave aside these categories, except if you have 2 minutes then to speak about terrorism and terrorists. And let's be plain. Nobody thinks of using death penalty for rabid thieves. It's only for the most heinous crime that you can consider death penalty in practice. Now, in this case, I was in charge of defending him. Nobody accepted. And I thought very thoughtfully that trying to discuss the matter would be voidless. And things should be planted on a different way. Guilty or not guilty, it was senseless.
Because he was guilty, he admitted to the crime.
He had recognized. There was no question about that. The question was, are you for or against death penalty?
Now, and since the public was outraged, did they turn against you? Did you fear for your safety?
Yes, that's an important, irrelevant, except for the atmosphere. There were masses of people outside of the court of justice yelling, amor, amor, put him to death, etc. You know, terrible climate. But I made a transformation radically of the case of Patrick Henry to the case of death penalty.
So you and put say, the death penalty on trial.
I said, if you believe in death penalty, well, it's the time. If you don't, or if you hesitate, then it's the time too. It's a question of choice. And I ended up, I shall always remember, it was a very hard trial. And I said to the jury, each of them, I looked at them in the eyes, after many witnesses had explained the uselessness, the cruelty, etc., and the ignorance of which we were about his personality at the very end, I say to them, now it's up to you, each of you, but don't think that it'll be ended tonight. They will come in France, and I think soon enough, abolition. And you will remain with your decision. And time will come when your sons or your daughters or your grandsons or daughters will look at you, and they will know that you have sentenced a man of 20, he was very young, to the guillotine. And you will see in their eyes what they think of you. And I sat up. And the decision was life sentence. And that was a tremendous turn, because people had so much said that this was the worst criminal. Once the decision of the jury about death penalty was no, we don't want to send him to the guillotine. It was a turn, it changed, because why guillotine the other if jury had refused to guillotine him, the worst of them?
You said that you had to leave the courtroom because you were overcome with anxiety. You didn't expect that decision, or did you feel when you were talking to the jury that you were getting through?
I knew one thing. Because after that, I had about 6 or 7 cases of the same sort, and I saved all those heads for one reason. You must not try to be eloquent, brilliant, literary, philosophical, political. You must bring the jurors to feel that the man who speaks to them, it's not only his conviction, but he calls on them as if I wanted them not to fall in what I knew would be for the remaining of their life something that would haunt them. This calls for tremendous energy. And I never lost the eyes of the jurors, never. I never read a paper. It was only coming from the depths of my heart. And that was the only way to reach their conviction.
How did Europe's history with totalitarian regimes, especially France's experience under the Nazis during World War II, color the debate on the death penalty?
Oh, no. During the Second World War, the problem was not at all about death penalty.
But people were being sent to their deaths.
Yes, people were sent to death, but remember, there were so many torturing, killing. The guillotine was used by the Germans too. But the question was freedom, end of the war. Then the debate would start again with Albert Camus, but during the war now.
Now, there, in this country, there are a couple of things that come regularly into the debate of the death penalty. One is the deterrence factor. The other is the possibility that an innocent person will be executed. Let's deal with deterrence first. Do you, how do you answer people who say that if people don't fear the possibility that they will be punished by being put to death, that they're much more likely to commit a heinous crime?
No, because facts prove the contrary. Evidence proves the contrary. As I said, take Europe. No country now in Europe practice death penalty. Not only they don't practice death penalty, but there is a European convention which prevents any state to reestablish death penalty. Those countries, all of them, have come to the same conclusion after 10 years. Whether you have or you don't have death penalty changes nothing in terms of fighting crime. Nothing.
Why do you think more people don't accept that? In this country, for example, New York and Texas both have death penalty laws, but Texas has executed over 400 people since 1976. New York has not executed one person, and we have a lower capital crime rate than Texas does.
Yes. It was the same everywhere.
But I'll bet you could not convince anybody in Texas that that means very much.
The time would come when they will be convinced, but it's important to realize that if the suppression of death penalty would end up in rising crime, wide crime number, you're in a democracy. No leader could stand against public opinion saying, well, you have abolished and now realize we're being murdered in a far longer, a far larger proportion. They would immediately have to change the law. That has existed nowhere. And it's not a question here of ethics. And in France, I mentioned the fact that on the day of the abolition voted by the Assembly, 2/3 of the French were for this penalty. Now, the majority is on the other side. It's part of the past. You see, there was jadis in the old days, a common practice to help to find the accomplices. Torture. Everywhere, torture has been suppressed as a legal mean of inquiry. Everywhere, except when you come to Guantanamo or the excesses we carried on in Algeria. But in a decent democracy, this is absolutely prohibited by international convention and by the principles. Well, who would come and say, aha, torture was such a convenient way of carrying on inquiry, rest established, nobody. But in the case of death, it's the uselessness. Don't think that 2/3 of the state in the world would have abolished death penalty if death penalty would be useful.
My guest is Robert Badinter. His book, Abolition, One Man's Battle Against the Death Penalty, published by Northeastern University Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In the United States, minorities, most notably African-American men, are sentenced to death at much higher rates than whites for similar crimes. Was there a racial or a religious or ethnic bias in death penalty cases in France?
It's everywhere. And it was that also in France. When I became minister, I asked, and it was brought to me, all the cases of in which people were sent to the guillotine during the 20th century, apart from political executions during the war immediately after. Just criminal case. And what I found out, to my surprise, is that the proportion of North African or black we were sent to the guillotine for same crimes as white, 3 times higher. And I said it to the National Assembly. I don't know, and nobody can say that their crimes were worse or that they were sent to the guillotine because they were North African or black. And that reason would be one enough reason to abolish death penalty. And that struck very much the Assembly.
people who support the death penalty will point to repeat offenders. And you write about the trial of Norbert Garceau. You say it was a textbook case for the death penalty.
Yes, he had killed a young girl, was sent to a 20 years hard labor, behaved very well. He was a common worker. And he went out, behaved very well in jail, went out at the end of his term, became a good worker again, and one day he repeated the same crime. A girl in his car tried to rape and kill her. And that was a very, very difficult case to handle. But at the very end, the jury accepted not to send him to the scaffold, because it appeared that when he was a soldier in the Indochina War, and the French had taken a village with Vietnamese, and during the day, there had been wild crimes carried on in this fierce battle, including rape. Whenever the girl tried to defend her and start yelling, the old crime pulsion came, and he killed. That was the answer. You cannot put a man on the guillotine to prevent another virtual crime. That's not how it works. The question is, how will you handle it in prison?
Now, when François Mitterrand appointed you Minister of Justice, he must have known your feelings about this. Was he already opposed to the death penalty?
It was not one of his major preoccupations at the beginning. But when he became the head of the Socialist Party, there was a very strong tradition. Jaurès, the great French leader, socialist, Léon Blum, were all great leaders in the field of fighting death penalty. And it was part of his cultural inheritance. And he got convinced at the end that death penalty couldn't be kept anymore because it was against the French principles and also because of the European Union. The courage was when, during the electoral campaign, 15 days before the decision, and it was his last chance to be elected, and the French were for death penalty, asked the question, he answered very quietly, "No, in my conscience, I've come to the conclusion that death penalty should be abolished in a democracy." And I say bluntly, if I'm elected, I shall ask the parliament to abolish death penalty. People thought it was an absolute mistake and that it cost him the election. I've always thought the contrary. I think Mitterrand was always looked at as a very shrewd, clever politician. And by ear, taking the chance of giving an unpopular answer to a fundamental question, he showed that he had principles. And that brought him more support.
It didn't help Michael Dukakis when he said something similar in a presidential debate. Maybe we're different countries. You're the one of the
techniques too. I saw the little real news. I mean, the program on Dukakis, you know, with the criminal coming to rape. That was horrible. In France, and at the time I was president of the Constitutional Court, we said that commercials, in terms of political politics, are unconstitutional because they make the chances of the candidates unequal. This is against democracy, and it's prohibited in France.
Now, you're one of the founders of the World Congress Against the Death Penalty. Do you hope that this book will influence the debate on the death penalty in the United States?
That's why I'm here. And the thing I want to stress is the United States people, they do not realize the cost of the death penalty keeping for the United States.
What, doesn't it cost a lot of money to keep a prisoner for life?
That's a question of money. I know it's more expensive, death penalty and its proceedings that keep it. But that's not the question. The question I mentioned is this. The United States is the only democratic state in Western world to have kept death penalty. And people don't realize enough the importance of the image of the first power in the world when it comes to this moral questioning. And the fact that the United States is alone among Western democracies to keep death penalty works against the United States justice first, because we never extradite, we never deliver to the United States a major criminal search for crime without the insurance that it will be granted pardon or it will not be sentenced. Result is that protection is through death penalty of these international or major criminals. Two, soft power, which does exist, which is the credit, the reputation, the high moral standing. It's the first democracy in history, the United States. And as a young man, I remember how the credit, the moral credit, the example of the United States was for us the light. The fact that the United States, as for company in the terms of death penalty, which countries, not its brothers, the Western democracy. Today in the world, 90% of the execution carried in the world are through China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Sudan. Those are the company for the United States of America, and that's the ones with which they stick.
Robert Badinter's book, Abolition, One Man's Battle Against the Death Penalty, is published by Northeastern University Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.